If you ever plan to visit the Griffith Park Observatory in Los Angeles, you can't miss the giant sundial on the front lawn, which is dedicated to six of the most influential and important scientific minds in modern history, which I'll give you a quick tour of, starting with one of the greatest astronomers of antiquity. Born in Turkey, Hipparchus spent most of his time in Greece. Considered the founder of trigonometry, he made observations on the island of Rhodes between 146 and 126 BC. His claim to fame is thanks to his improved astronomical instruments, which enabled him to determine the places of objects in the sky with greater accuracy than had been attained before. He determined the length of the tropical year, the size and distance of the moon, the eccentricity of the sun's orbit, but his greatest discovery was concerning the precession of the equinoxes, also known as Plato's Great Year, a roughly 26,000-year astronomical cycle which was divided into 12 ages, mimicked in the yearly 12 signs of the zodiac, which was documented long before his time, but he was able to catalog over 1,000 stars, dividing them according to their brightness into six magnitudes, and his development on the subject of spherical trigonometry placed him high among history's great mathematicians. Next on the monument is William Herschel, a famous German-born musician who moved to England at an early age to become one of the greatest observing astronomers, developing the reflecting telescope, making with his own hands several hundred mirrors, which he used to discover Uranus, making him famous, of course, but his greatest work was the opening up of the subject of stellar astronomy. With him, every star was a sun. He investigated the distribution of the stars and the form of the galaxy. He found that many pairs of stars consisted of two suns revolving about each other, and this may even be the case with our own solar system, which many modern astronomers have postulated has a brown dwarf that influences the orbit of outer planets. Dark, so it doesn't emit light, but can be detected mathematically and possibly responsible for periodic global cataclysms on Earth by nudging comets and asteroids from the outer Oort cloud towards the inner solar system. Next, we have Isaac Newton, born in England the year Galileo died, and widely recognized as one of the greatest mathematicians and physicists of all time, and among the most influential scientists, expanding on the work of Galileo on the laws of motion, and his ultimate triumph, the law of gravitation, which states that every particle of matter in the universe attracts every other particle. And he provides some mathematical formulas for this, and shared in developing the branch of mathematics known as calculus. He also developed a sophisticated theory of color based on the observation that a prism separates white light into the colors of the visible spectrum, and made the first theoretical calculation of the speed of sound. That said, he was a devout but unorthodox Christian who privately rejected the doctrine of Trinity, refused to take holy orders in the Church of England, and dedicated much of his time to the study of alchemy. Which brings us to Kepler, another German who formulated his three laws on planetary motion, describing the paths planets take in their orbits around a star, and helping future astronomers make calculations predicting their behavior. Kepler overcame ill health, poverty, and misfortune to discover these laws, and also incorporated religious arguments and reasoning into his work, motivated by the religious conviction and belief that God had created the world according to an intelligible plan that is accessible through the natural light of reason. Kepler described his new astronomy as celestial physics. Next, we have Galileo, an Italian that made himself a telescope and discovered four satellites revolving around Jupiter, and found that Venus presented phases similar to those of the moon, not to mention making rough measurements of the heights of the mountains on the moon. He discovered that the Milky Way is made up of many faint stars, and showed that the spots on the sun are not planets revolving near the sun, but are on the sun's surface. His formulation and experimental proof of the laws of motion laid the foundation of mechanics, but since doctrine of the motion of the earth was regarded as heresy by the church, Galileo's work brought him into the hands of the Inquisition. He was imprisoned and forced to recant his beliefs, and when released, he was forbidden to teach or publish anything. He retired in broken-down health and became blind for 5 years before he died at the age of 78. And last but not least, Nicholas Copernicus. Born in Poland, he placed the sun at the center of the solar system, challenging the idea that the earth was at the center, which had been universally believed for centuries, bringing about nothing short of a scientific revolution. Copernicus showed that the daily rotation of the earth on its axis would account for the apparently daily revolution of the stars. He also showed that the planetary motions were much more simply explained by supposing that the planets, including the earth, revolved in circular orbits with the sun slightly out of center. But not all scientists that have made contributions necessarily get a monument. Of course, the astronomers that I just told you about are known to all, their achievements universally celebrated, and even if they were at one time ostracized for their beliefs, they have been vindicated and are now accepted as part of mainstream academia and featured in textbooks all across the world. That said, there are scientists that have contributed to humanity's body of knowledge that are shunned, whose stories are not completely disclosed to the public. Maybe because they are just misunderstood, or maybe because their contributions involved an unorthodox, esoteric aspect that the modern-day powers that be prefer to keep covert and secret. Jack Parsons was a sex magician that participated in what many claim were satanic, drug-fueled orgies, but he was also considered by many as the father of modern rocketry. An engineer and chemist responsible for advancements in both liquid and solid rocket fuel, and one of the principal founders of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, whose scientific contributions to spaceflight were so profound that he even has one of the craters on the moon named after him. Born in 1914 in Los Angeles, Parsons was inspired by science fiction literature and developed an interest in rocketry in his childhood. In 1928, he began amateur rocket experiments, and by 1939, he converted to Thelema, the new religious movement founded by the English occultist Aleister Crowley, and joined the Ordo Templi Orientis, an occult Germanic lodge which taught ancient alchemical secrets, which Parsons incorporated into his work in propulsion, chemistry, and spirituality.
This is Edward Alexander Crowley, also known as Aleister Crowley. He styled himself the wickedest man in the world. He believed himself to be the great beast, and he changed his name to Aleister Crowley, so it would add up in both English, Hebrew, and Greek Kabbalah as 666. In 1904, Crowley had a communication with an extraterrestrial being named Iwas. And this being, through his wife, kind of a channeling type operation, brought forth a book that was called the Book of the Law in 1904. And this book declared that the slain and risen God had stepped off the throne and that a new God, the crowned and conquering child, was taking his place. He was a brilliant genius. He could play 8 chess games blindfolded. He was an accomplished poet, mountaineer, painter, writer. He had so many Masonic degrees that you could fill up 5 pages of a book with them. This guy was probably the most highly honored Mason in the world. And he began doing rituals to bring forth this crowned and conquering child. And he began to start what he called the cult of the fascinating child. And in doing this, he uncovered, without knowing it, the royal secret of Masonry. And what happened was, a gentleman came knocking at his door after he published a book. And in this book, it was a book of poetry, and in the book he had made an allusion to something. And this guy, his name was Theodore Royce. He was a German occultist and the head of the OTO, the Ordo Templi Orientis, which stands for the Order of Eastern Templars. There's the Knights Templar again. And this Theodore Royce told Crowley that he had given away the greatest secret in occult history. And Crowley said, "What do you mean? I don't even understand it." So the guy promptly initiated him on the spot to the 9th degree of the OTO and then explained the secret to him. And you're about to learn what this secret is. The secret is that as a Mason, you are promised immortality. Where do they get their promise of immortality? Simply, the secret that Crowley uncovered, probably through demonic intervention, is the secret that this immortality is conveyed through tantric sex magic.
Jack Parsons immersed himself into esoteric rituals and incorporated alchemical aspects of the occult into his propulsion technology. During rocket tests, for example, Parsons often recited Crowley's poem, Hymn to Pan, as a good luck charm. Parsons and the German aerospace engineer, Wernher von Braun, had hours of telephone conversations about rocketry in their respective countries, as well as their own research. Von Braun was the leading figure in the development of rocket technology in nationalist Germany and a pioneer of rocket and space technology in the United States. Without Parsons, Neil Armstrong may have never set foot on the moon. And to those that don't believe America ever made it to the moon in the first place, then surely one can say that without Parsons, American military power might be a fraction of what it is today. His scientific contributions were probably downplayed because he was a leader of a black magic sex cult, of which Scientology founder L. Ron Hubbard was once a member, and also Jack Parsons' roommate. Hubbard was a relatively famous science fiction writer at the time, and Parsons was a big fan of the genre, and was immediately taken with Hubbard, writing, quote, "He is a gentleman, red hair, green eyes, honest and intelligent, and we have become great friends." They allegedly participated in sex rituals in Parsons' Pasadena home, and shared partners, with Hubbard eventually taking off and marrying Parsons' young girlfriend, as Hubbard also allegedly drew esoteric power and knowledge from these ancient alchemical secrets that were associated with Crowley's teachings.
A magician, the magic cults of the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th centuries in the Middle East were fascinating. The only modern work that has anything to do with them is a trifle wild in spots, but it's fascinating work in itself. And that's work written by Aleister Crowley, the late Aleister Crowley, my very good friend. And he did himself a splendid piece of aesthetics built around those magic cults. It's a very interesting reading to get a hold of a copy of a book, quite rare, but it can be obtained, The Master Therion, T-H-E-R-I-O-N, The Master Therion by Aleister Crowley. He signs himself the Beast, the Mark of the Beast, 666. very, very something.
While there has been debate as to the degree of influence Aleister Crowley has had on L. Ron Hubbard and Scientology, let's see what L. Ron Hubbard's son has to say.
My first guest, Ron DeWolf, was the son of the missing L. Ron Hubbard. Let's give him a big round of applause, please.
His deep involvement in personal use of drugs on himself and others, black magic.
When you say black magic, what are you talking about? I mean, some of the things that I read in the stack of material, it sounds just absolutely unbelievable. What are you talking about when you say this?
Well, the funny thing is that the actual truth is about as far out as Scientology itself. Really, the basis of Scientology, which is rather hidden and covered over, is the occult, deep involvement with satanic powers that he felt that he was deeply involved with British black magician called Aleister Crowley, and through putting himself in deep hypnotic trances and the use of drugs on himself, he wanted to become the most powerful being in the world.
How would you describe what Scientology is all about and what the Church of Scientology is all about?
Well, to put it in layman's sort of a succinct terms, Scientology says basically that 74 trillion years ago, everyone willed themselves into existence, and through space opera games and science fiction sort of things, they have created this universe. This is a universe created by you, me, and everybody else. And now we find ourselves trapped into bodies. And the goal of Scientology is to get untrapped from these bodies and to return to this godlike state, which is called Operating Thetan.
How do you do that?
Through applied philosophy, through sitting down across from each other in chairs with e-meters, which is a skin galvanometer with a meter dial on it, and through answering questions and asking questions, this is supposed to release the various charges and the problems one has had throughout all of these centuries and hundreds and thousands of reincarnations, get the charge off it as if it was these incidents were a charged battery, and by doing so, this is supposed to return you to this state of high ability. He was very deeply involved in black magic from early teenage years, which was the use of drugs and hypnosis as an example. He used to conjure up these demons and thereby plug into them or have them plug into him, and a lot of his early writing, which could be called spirit writing. And so he was very deeply involved in black magic, as an example, especially from Aleister Crowley, which was an English black magician. And around 1947 or so, he decided that he was the Beast 666 incarnate, because that's what Aleister Crowley was, and he died in 1947.
While Crowley was a high-level Freemason, there are reports that L. Ron Hubbard was a Rosicrucian, at least for a brief period in 1940. The ancient and mystic order of the Rosy Cross, as the organization is formally known, has the symbol of a cross with a rose at its center. It has several meanings, depending on the source, some claiming that the Rosy Cross predates Christianity, where the cross represents the human body and the rose represents the individual's unfolding consciousness. That's one interpretation. Looking at this cross, we can clearly see 8 points, which can be traced back to the 8-pointed star of Inanna of Sumer and Ishtar of ancient Babylon. This covert form of goddess worship was infused into the European secret societies by the Knights Templar.
It was the Templars that built hundreds of Gothic cathedrals all over Europe from 1100 to 1300 AD. filled with esoteric symbolism that they brought back from the Middle East, such as black Madonna statues, which have nothing to do with skin color, but are symbolic of the mother goddess, such as Isis, and, like the black Kali goddess of India, represents the divine feminine energy, as light is first born from darkness. Just like the black sun symbol used by the nationalist Germany, who also adorned themselves with skull and bone symbolism, which were also identified with the Knights Templar, as were the Templar cross, the swastika, and the Seal of Solomon, all present in the stone-carved churches of Lalibela, Ethiopia, erected by the Templars. Of course, the Templars are also associated with Baphomet, which is also symbolic of Lucifer, the Lightbringer, and the ancient Gnostic goddess religion, which involves tantrically induced, altered, trance-like states of consciousness, which allegedly avails the practitioner to psychic phenomena used in mediumship, as is attributed to the occult secret orders, such as the Vril Society, which has existed in pre-World War II Germany, and allegedly participated in channeling that resulted in advanced anti-gravitic propulsion technology, which incidentally became known as UFOs, a phenomena that started exactly during World War II. Of course, almost 80 years after the official end of the Second World War, it is still a subject shrouded in mystery, where incidents such as the battle over Los Angeles that involved a well-documented saucer-shaped craft is explained away, as is the crash in Roswell, New Mexico, or the still-classified military invasion of Antarctica, known as Operation High Jump. It should come as no surprise that L. Ron Hubbard, who also spoke about saucer-shaped craft, was naval intelligence during World War II. And the death of Jack Parsons was also controversial, as he allegedly passed away from an explosion in his home in 1952. The same year, a fleet of a dozen saucer-shaped UFOs were photographed flying over the White House. There seems to be a missing gap between the conventional science of the general public, celebrated on monuments, and the covert Templar-derived science of antiquity, which is rarely depicted on statues or in textbooks, unless they are books restricted to the genre of science fiction. My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon and through all other major book outlets. If you'd like to support my work, you can do that through patreon.com. There should be a link in the description. Please subscribe for future updates. Leave your thoughts below. Have a wonderful weekend, and I hope to see you again soon.